Blog Talk Radio.
Blessings. Welcome to the hottest show on Blog Talk Radio. This is the No Romance Without Finance show, and I'm your host, Brother Vernon Muhammad. Assalamu alaikum. Welcome, and I'm so glad that you can join us tonight. We got something good lined up. We're back to our regular format. You know, we got some action items that we need to take care of. We are poetry in motion, and we're making sure that our conversation actually leads to some productive results. So today's show is primarily focused on alternatives to money and developing our own currency exchange. This is going to be exciting. We tackled this topic before. We mentioned the ideas of time banking. We're going to get into that a little bit later. And we also mentioned actually bartering as a system and a means for us to exchange goods and services with one another. But that's a conversation that we said then, and I'm going to reiterate and say it again now. It's going to be an ongoing discussion. Okay, we have to implement this and then refine it and develop it as a part of our culture. As we know that we're looking at the world and everything that's going on in this world as we know it. And as sure as the day is long, as sure as the sky is high, this world is disintegrating, it's crumbling, it can't sustain itself, much less sustain you and me, who we certainly want to stay afloat after any ship that we may be on sink. So we got to come up with some ideas. We got to come up with some solutions to problems that are right before us. And as students and followers of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan and the teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad in the Nation of Islam, we are taught to continually seek to solve problems. Think mathematically, think for the whole, and think in terms of the solution to the problem that all of our people face. So that's where we stand today, and we realize that so much of our time and attention and focus is wrapped up in money and our quest for money. And really, so many of us have been duped by so many false ideas as it relates to money, like if you don't have money, you won't ever get money. You must have money to get the things that you need in life. Time is money. All these ideas about money, when in fact money, or what we have as a currency in most so-called civilized nations, is just an idea, just a concept. It's what's called fiat money. In most of the nations, the dollar, I think the pound also, is not backed by gold. They can print as much of it as they want because it really doesn't have the actual value that's on it. They print it, print more of it, print more of that, and still say it all has the same value. And you know, the more of something that you have, the less precious and more valuable it is. If something is rare or something is hard to come by, then yeah, it does have value, but as long as they're just printing paper money, they can say it has whatever value that it does have. But you and I both know that a dollar today won't buy the same thing that a dollar would have bought 10 years ago. That's because the dollar is losing its value, even though it still says $1 on the face of it. So we got to come up with some solutions, because we all need houses, we all need transportation, we all need food, we all need to take care of the basic necessities of life. How are you going to do that without money? That's the conversation. I hope that we get some more people to join us, because this has got to be more than a one-person conversation. I know a lot of you like to listen in the archives, and that's fine and dandy. I'm so glad that we have audience members and listeners who do catch us when they can't catch us live. But this is the type of discussion that I hope you all would share, and I'm going to ask you, like I typically do on this show, to take some steps with me. And number one, first step I want you to take is when you are listening to this show, whether you're listening live, whether you're listening in the archive, I want you to get onto your social network, whether it's Twitter, whether it's Facebook, whether it's LinkedIn, whatever and wherever you do your thing. Get on and send out the link. Share this link with other people, because no matter where we are, this conversation, the topic of this conversation, is going to affect everybody. And more people need to know about this subject matter. We get people, you know, having hours and hours of conversation based on the show Scandal that comes on, or whatever night it comes on. Everything else stops. No serious conversation going on. It's only talking about Scandal. Let Lil Wayne get out of the hospital and come out with a new song. Everybody going to be talking about Lil Wayne, his new song, after coming out of the hospital. So many people having a conversation about, you know, these award shows. When the Oscars were on, you couldn't get a serious conversation out of anybody. They just had to see who won the best picture of the year, best actor of the year, actress of the year, whatever the case may be. Stuff that don't matter, don't have nothing to do with us. We watched the Super Bowl and all them commercials that they spend millions of dollars on for a 30-second spot. And, you know, those people are getting rich. We can't even focus on what's going to put money in our own pockets, because we're too busy being entertained by, or being distracted by, other people who already have millions of dollars in their pockets. So we got to do something to turn that around. And I would ask you, just like my teacher asked me, to spread information about these topics. Let's engage people and start dialogue on things that matter, because the time and what must be done is quickly making itself real and ever more apparent. And we have to take it seriously, because not focusing on the right thing at the right time could be detrimental to you, your family, and all the things that you hold important, near and dear. So that's a roadmap for where we're going to go show, I've been doing quite a bit of research over the past few days on what makes up an alternative monetary system. You know, what is an alternative exchange system? What does any of that mean? And what I want to do now is play a little clip for you from people at transitionnetwork.org. They're a UK, England-based group, and they're looking at creating alternative means of exchange. Tools to help you build a new kind of local economy. What does any of that mean? They have what's called a re-economy project. Not economy, not recon, but re-economy project. Take a listen to this and see if you can get an idea on what's being said. Just to the gentleman explain what it's all about.
Our economy is facing a huge challenge, which is that we are thinking of tools that worked and were appropriate at a time when we have abundant cheap energy, abundant cheap credit, and we really weren't bothered or aware of the implications of what we did on the climate. Now we know how what we're doing is affecting the climate. We know that we are entering an age of extreme energy price volatility. We know the scale of the debt amount created by the challenges that we find us facing. So we need new thinking for the time we're moving into the old thinking that the dinosaur economy, if you like, really has passed in place. We need new fresh thinking of how we're going to create economic activity, livelihoods, skills and opportunities into the future. What we're seeing is communities all over the place emerging, responding to the challenges of the times that we're in, great resources and creativity, and setting up new enterprises, social enterprises, based off and around making the community more resilient, and being a low-carbon business, respecting natural limits, being about localization where that's appropriate, being about not just personal profit, but wider social economic benefits, and also being about where appropriate, bringing assets into community ownership and being developed on behalf of the community. Transition Network is an organization set up to support, inspire, train, network thousands and thousands of transition initiatives around the world in 34 countries. And it's very much focused on positive solutions, self-organizing, people just getting out there, getting on with their problem up their sleeves, making this kind of change happen in the community. And re-economy is one of the most exciting initiatives that's coming through the transition network.
I'm Fiona Ward from the Re-economy Project. And what we're trying to do with this project is to build the capacity of Transition Town or any kind of similar community group to grow a new kind of local economy where they are. The kind of local economy we think we want to see is one that creates an abundance of opportunity for everybody to meet their needs. Its primary purpose is about increasing the well-being and happiness of everybody in the community, including those who are most vulnerable. And it trades in a way that respects resource limits. So there's three main parts of the economy framework. The first one is around leadership and visioning. The second one is around transforming system organisation. And the third one is around starting new enterprise. The leadership and visioning section will help you bring together a group of local strategic organisations like your council, your chamber of commerce, local colleges and other groups like that that you need to work with to build this new kind of local. And it helps you collectively produce a vision of how you want that local economy to be and how it's going to be different from what you've got today. Transforming existing organisations is about how can you talk to businesses and companies that are already there in your town and how can you help them understand how their business models might need to change if they're going to succeed in this kind of new local economy and new kind of Start New Enterprise section is about how you can help stimulate the general culture of entrepreneurship in the town where you live and encourage people to come forward and start up new enterprises, the kind of enterprise you want to see in the website is only one part of the Reconomy project. It's where you can find the kind of static set of resources that can help you. But do also have a look at our Facebook page and our Twitter feed if that interests you, because that's where every day we're posting on the new content and material that I hope is going to be helpful. And it's where you can join the conversation and you can ask for help and you can share your own experiences with other people who are wanting to do similar things. We're also arranging a number of regional and national conferences each year so that we can get together in person and make connections and exchange what we've learned and help each other on this journey.
All right. That was a 4-minute clip or so, 4-minute, 35-second clip on the Reconomy Project. That's the project that is being put together and promoted by the transitionnetwork.org. And the basis of them, that organization and this project is helping build new kinds of local economies. You heard the lady say re-educating merchants and companies and businesses that exist in our economies already and teaching them how a different way, a different model of doing business works. How do we do business with one another if we're not exchanging the currency of the land? How do we actually exchange goods and services with one another if we're not doing it in dollars? What I get from you is not, I can't get it by paying $5 bills or $10 bills or 20s or whatever the case may be. How do we do that? You know, how do you get what you need out of me? I may be a mechanic. I may be a grocery store owner. I may be, you know, whatever the case may be. Whatever you pay money for now, you know, I may be the gas station guy. But how do you get what you need from me if I don't accept dollar bills, if I don't accept U.S. legal tender? We got to put together a system like that because as time goes on, it's getting harder and harder to make those dollars stretch and last and go as far as we need them to go. Certainly getting harder and harder to get more dollars. I don't know about you, but when was the last time you worked a 40-hour week and you just got a big bump up or an increase in the amount of wages that you got for your 40 hours of time? Not too many people are getting raises and bonuses and whatnot now. In fact, the norm now is quickly becoming that more people are getting cutbacks. There are more rifts and furloughs and layoffs, downsizing or right-sizing or modernization, whatever you want to call it. People are either losing their job or losing time off of their job. So it's impossible to earn more money when that's the circumstance. So we got to figure something out. How are you going to get what you need? How are you going to provide for your family and yourself when money is not the option, when you can't get any more money or when money is not available to you? You still got to keep it moving. You still got to get and have what you need. So let's talk about that. Join in on the conversation. If you're listening, the phone number to dial in on is 646-716-5971. We'll be getting some callers into the switchboard soon, and I see that we have one or two guests that are in the chat room. Welcome, and thank you for joining us on the No Romance Without Finance show today. Let me read you a little clip. Let me read you a little excerpt from one of the most monumental books of the 20th century. It was written by and for black people, and the name of it is called Message to the Black Man in America. It was written by the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. In this book, on page number 61, he writes in a section titled, "The So-Called Negro Must Do Something for Himself." He puts a scenario out there. He says, "In unity, we can accomplish much. Think of the 20 million of your and my kind putting $1 a year aside for ourselves in a national treasury toward the day of want." For those of you who don't know what a day of want is when you want what you need, but you don't have it. So you're stuck for yourselves in the national treasury, then you'd be in a very good position. He goes on to say, suppose we laid aside $1 every month against the day of want. Look at the millions that we could build up for ourselves within a few years. And further on, later on, paragraphs down, he says, should we not sell our people everything they want or need? But no, we give all the money out of our pockets to the slave master. Now think about all the things that you spend money on. Think about the good things first. Think about the things that you actually should spend money on. You have to buy bathroom tissue. You have to buy paper towels. You have to buy soap. Maybe you drink out of the tap, but if you got good sense, you have to buy water for you and your family to drink. You have to buy deodorant. You have to buy socks. You have to buy underwear. All of these things that money goes out of the black community for. Why aren't we providing these things for ourselves? Goes on further to say, we boast that we should be recognized as equals. Well, let us make ourselves equals. We cannot be equal with the masters until we own what the masters own. We cannot be equal with the masters until we have the freedom the master enjoys. We cannot be equal with the master until we have the education the master has. Then we can say, master, recognize us as your equal. Today, you are begging the masters, the slave master's children, for what? You're begging them for a job. You are begging for complete recognition as their equals. Let's be honest with ourselves. According to our history, we cannot find where the master made his slave equal until the slave made himself worthy of equality. Now, this is not, you know, archaic language that he's using here, because as many of us believe in the Bible, we know that there's a verse of scripture that says, spare the rod, spoil the child. Okay, everybody knows that one. That's a famous one. They never tell you about the next verse, the very next verse that goes after that. And it talks about debt being slavery, and the person who is in debt to somebody else is actually enslaved by that person. So financial wisdom, financial sound practices, and knowledge and education, as he cites here about economics and finance, is something that we need if we're going to move ourselves out of the position that we're in to get dragged down with that ship that's sinking, as I spoke about before. The U.S. economy and the ability of politicians to solve the problems has reached its end point. So basically, this ship is sinking. We would be wise to get off. But first, we got to do what's smart. Stop begging somebody else to do for us what we should and could be doing for ourselves. So that's where this alternative economy, alternative monetary system comes in. I hope I did a good enough job of painting the background for the scenario of the conversation that we're going to be having as the show goes on. We're in a position where no one is really going to or able to solve the problems that we're facing. You look at what's going on in black communities and inner cities all across this country, and no one really wants to address the seriousness or the root of the problem. Number one, as the Honorable Elijah Muhammad cites, is education, the basis of the education that is currently being offered is failing our children, okay? And an educator out of Chicago, Abdullah Muhammad, who is an assistant principal in the Chicago school system, was at an educators forum or seminar, or symposium or something like that, and the question was put forth, you know, what is the cause? What's at the root of why the educational system seems to be failing so many black children? Why are we losing so many of our youth in these inner cities? And what role does the educational system have to play in this? And he, you know, having the benefit of being taught exactly what the problem is by the teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and by Minister Farrakhan, already knew. He said the problem with your system is white supremacy, the problem with the educational system and why it fails black children and people of color in general is white supremacy. But before he could actually verbalize that, he said a white educator stood up and made the statement. Well, the problem with the educational system is that it's founded on white supremacy. So it's not even being hidden anymore. Everybody is admitting what the root of the problem is. So we need the right kind of education, but we also need to make sure that we're putting our energy and our time in the right areas. Searching for a job, hoping someone will give us a job, or somehow money will just end up in our mailbox. You know, a check will just happen to arrive for us. It's not going to get it. We got to go to work. We got to take care of business. We must do for ourselves what we're looking for other people to do for us. So here is where the alternative economy comes in, and I want to share with you some of the ideas that have already been put out on this particular subject and this particular topic. Minister Farrakhan shared a quote some years ago. Said, "He who describes the circumference of your knowledge also, I think it's also prescribes the limits or the diameter of your activity." So if your topic of conversation, if the things that you know about already, if the things that you're even bothering to learn about are limited and restricted to just a certain set of subjects and topics, then you'll only be engaged in certain activity. Here's an example. A long time ago, you know, everybody grew up knowing that you go to school, get good grades, and hope to get a good job after you graduate. That was, you know, common knowledge. That was the whole purpose of going to school, so you can grow up and get a good job. Well, as long as that was the education that we were receiving, nobody ever thought of, very, very, very few people ever actually thought about coming out and owning or starting something of their own, starting a business, starting an enterprise of their own. And the people who did come out and think along those lines, they received something more than just a standard education. I guarantee you that. You have some gifted individuals who throughout history who have gone through the same public school system that everybody else went through, and they were able to rise to success and prominence. But at some point in their education, at some point in what they were learning and the activities they were engaged in, they stopped being concerned about finding a good job, and they started learning about how to rule, how to conquer, how not to just be an employee, but how to be the boss. So that's the type of thing that's not generally taught in the regular school system. You have to go and get specialized education and training and teaching for that. So you can go to, you know, various schools of businesses, business from the community college level to four-year institutions, all throughout, you know, America. In the D.C. area, there's University of Maryland, there's Georgetown, there's Howard University, there's University of District of Columbia. They even have community colleges that all focus on business and give degrees in business. Some of them even give doctoral degrees in business or Masters of Business Administration. They all have those same degrees and offer the same type of education, but none of them are comparable to Wharton School of Business or Harvard School of Business. It's a different breed, different class of education that you're getting from these institutions and in these different classes. Okay? So we've got to make ourselves available to more information, more knowledge, and alternatives to what we're just being spoon-fed and what's being spoon-fed to our children, because we know that that's not going to adequately prepare us to get ahead of the problem, to overcome the circumstances that are before us. So let's take a look at some of these alternatives. One alternative, and this is an alternative that I talked about on the show a few months back, was the idea of time banking. Time banking. And here, in one instance, it's put forward as Ithaca hours. I did a search for alternative monetary systems, and quite a few links popped up. But I have a listing of cities across America. Yeah, I don't know what the total amount is, but I got a long list of cities across America that are offering or call themselves what they call our system. This particular one is called Ithaca Money Homepage, Local Currency Resources. Now, in each one of these cities, there are, you know, one, two, three, however many businesses that are offering an alternative to greenbacks, an alternative to U.S. dollars. As an example, I'll give you one. In Arizona, in Flagstaff, Arizona, there's this particular business, Flagstaff Neighborly Notes. Might be a bookstore, I don't know. But what they say is the currency is an hour-based script where 1 hour equals $10. Why don't we look up that word script? Make sure we understand exactly what we're talking about. S-E-R-I-P, definition. A script. The script is a receipt or certificate list, similar brief piece of writing. A written document that acknowledges a debt. A temporary document representing a fraction of a share resulting from a split or a spinoff. A script, a small scrap of paper, especially with a short list or a schedule written on it. Provisional certificate. So basically it's a something, a piece of paper, some kind of a note that says, okay, this equals some amount, whether it's an amount that's owed or an amount that's paid. I think usually it represents an amount that's owed. It represents a debt. Okay? Kind of like a U.S. Reserve note. Okay. It's an IOU, basically. Instead of saying, okay, well, this is worth, you know, an ounce of gold, it, you know, it's just a 5 or a 10 or 50 or whatever printed on it, and, you know, it just says that you're going to get some money, some real money for this currency later on at some future point in time. So it's an IOU. So the Ithaca Group, the model that's being used for this type of alternative currency is where they denominate your time and equate that to what we know and what we're familiar with in dollars. Okay, so 1 hour of your time, the slip of paper that you would carry and that you would have, would say that you have 1 hour on it, and that's equal to $10. Okay, and I'll show you how this is used in a minute. But the notes are issued in three denominations. So you have one script or 1 hour. You have a half a script, and you have a quarter of a script or a quarter of an hour. Remember, we're thinking about time is money. So don't think about, you know, $1, a half a dollar, a quarter of a dollar. Think about time. Okay, think about an hour. 1 hour, half hour, or quarter of an hour. And to date, since they started the program, and you know the number of people that they have participating with them, I think it's 80 participants and 80 members, 8 to 10 storefronts. They've issued and they have circulating in their little economy about $3,200 worth of Flagstaff Neighborly Notes. That's what they are. That's what the actual script. Or that's what their currency is, Neighborly Notes. So they have $3,200 worth of these notes circulating amongst themselves. So in these, between these 80 members and between these 8 to 10 storefronts, they can go in and they can give time in exchange for goods and services. They can give either an hour or half an hour or a quarter of an hour or any, you know, combination of them, several hours if they need to, and get the equivalent of $10 worth of goods and services. Think about that. That's a way to exchange goods and services without money. might work if you don't have to have money or you don't have to have any goods and services coming from outside of your community. Something to think about. But at the same point in time, within your community, within the people that you're closest to, you get to decide how and at what cost you're going to be willing to trade with other people, okay? You may have a babysitter. You may know a babysitter, someone that needs to, you need child care. You need someone to watch and take care of your children while you're out working or doing whatever it is you're doing. Well, that babysitter may give up 2 or 3 or 4 hours of time for that service, and in exchange for that 4 hours of time, an equal fair exchange would be you doing a service for that babysitter. Now, they already have 4 hours of time, so maybe that equates to a half an hour trip, you know, for several half hour trips until they get 4 hours out of it. Maybe that equates to you giving them 4 hours when they need their children watched. Could be anything. Maybe that needs meeting. Maybe that equates to 4 hours of time helping them to clean up their house in their backyard, you know, as we get ready for the spring or as they go from summer into fall, whatever. You know, that's to be worked out among the members of the community and the people who are going to be exchanging that time for goods and services. It can be worked out, though. That's the point that I'm trying to make. Here's some more in California. It's Berkeley Bread. Berkeley Regional Exchange and Development. That's what BRED is an acronym for. There, they have their currency is an hour-based program, and their currency comes in three denominations, quarter, half, and one solid hour. One solid hour equals $12. And to date, this particular group of people has exchanged $30,000 worth of what they call bread. So there's 250 members in its 15 to 20 businesses. Okay, the program aims to create a thriving local economy that will counter the negative impacts of a globalizing economy. BRED also seeks to build community and increase civic participation. They're planning a vigorous outreach program to locally owned businesses and to diversify and expand their constituents. Okay, so here's another group, California, Berkeley, California. They've gotten together, and amongst themselves, they said, okay, what's acceptable for the goods and services that I have to offer? Here's your time. If I have a store, if I have a grocery store, you come in and stock the shelves for an hour. That'll get you $12. You can get $12 worth of goods out of the grocery store. Come mop the floors for an hour. Come work behind the cash register for an hour. Whatever job needs to be done in the grocery store, you do that for an hour, you get the equivalent of $12. There's a store here in Maryland, Mount Rainier, Maryland, called Glut Food Co-op, G-L-U-T, Food Co-op, health food store. They deal with local and organic produce, nutritional supplements, things of that nature. But you can go to Glut and you can volunteer or you can work hours in the store, and for each hour that you work, that equates to a certain dollar value that you can then exchange for some of the groceries that are in the store. I don't know what the total number of members and, you know, whether they have a partnership with other businesses in the area or around their city, but that's basically how the program works. Okay? We know it as time banking. That's one particular way that it was displayed before, time banking. In many instances, you'll find different names. In Kansas, they call it real dollars. Real dollars are issued on par with federal dollars, denominations of $1, $3, and $10. They have about 8,000 real dollars in circulation. I don't know what REAL, the acronym R-E-A-L, stands for. They have it all capitalized. But they say this is modeled on the system put in place on the Isle of Man in the early 1800s. Let's see what happened on the Isle of Man in the early 1800s. I can find the window that just opened up. I'm ready to give y'all loads of information. I got loads of windows open too. Just gotta find the one that I clicked on. Think that one's any good. Might have a dead link there. Okay, no problem. We'll keep it moving. We'll keep it moving because we have others. In Arizona, in Bloomington, no, in Indiana, in Bloomington, Indiana, they have blooming hours. One blooming hour is equivalent to $10. Same basic model, okay? So in a small community, in a small group setting, could be an agreement between two people, or it could be a large church, mosque, or study group, or whatever the case may be. But if everybody put on the table what their needs are, and then everybody decided what they would, how much time they would commit to helping someone else fulfill their needs, get their needs met, then we would have a bustling economy that exists amongst ourselves that doesn't depend on dollars coming from the outside. Now, the thought that I had when I, you know, rolled these scenarios around in my own head was you're going to need some type of funding, some type of influx of cash. I mean, how are you going to go to a store and, you know, the store doesn't have dollar bills that it can pay to the merchants or the vendors that it goes and gets, you know, its produce from? It's just not going to work like that unless you have a total disconnection from the outside monetary system and a total disconnection from people who are dependent on U.S. reserve notes. You're going to have to do some business in that regard. And I think that's where this comes in, because there are going to be people who come into a store or place of business and they're not part of the membership that participates in this program. So they're going to bring money into the economy regardless. Okay, but there has to be an agreement among the people in the community inside of that economy, they're only going to exchange goods and services with one another in terms of this alternative currency. Okay? So I also thought about if a pool of vendors, if a group of vendors, let's say at the church or the mosque, you know, after everything is over, you know, you got people set up their little table and everybody wants to sell, you know, soup or desserts or whatever it is that they sell. There has to be an agreement where someone from the group or everybody from the group commits to a certain amount that they're going to add to the local economy. It stays within that economy. Let's say everybody took out a $20 bill, and if they get together every week, then every week, we know we're going to spend $20. You have what I need. I have what you need. This other person has what we both need, and we both have what the other person needs. So everybody's coming. Everybody's got $20. My first $20 that I spend is going to be with person A. Now, my $20 bill has a little red mark on the lower left-hand corner, so they know that that's one of the dollars, and that's one of the $20 bills that came, that's supposed to stay in the economy. That dollar, that $20 bill has to circulate in the economy. So whoever I spent that $20 bill with that little red mark on the corner, they have to spend that $20 bill with somebody else in the circle. That can't leave. It's got to go to everybody. And once it goes to everybody, we leave it in the pot, leave it in the economy for our group, so that when we do have to go outside for anything, we have a stash, we have a pool of money that we can then share in equally to benefit ourselves and benefit one another. Okay? We know that money is going to come in, and other people who aren't a part of the circle are going to come in, and they're going to put money into the circle. Well, maybe that money can stay, maybe that money's got to go out too, but at least if that money, if all of that money goes out, you know that, you know, you're a vendor and you've got to make money because you got to pay your light bill. Well, I doubt very seriously if the electric company is going to want to be a part of your alternative economy. You know, they want dollars. They don't want your time, bank hours, or anything like that. So the money, some of the money that you make definitely is going to go outside of the economy, but you got to start somewhere. And the starting point is making sure that each of those dollars or $20 bills or whatever denomination it is with the little red mark on it stays inside the community. And after everybody touches it, after it circulates among everybody, we make sure that it stays and is there to benefit the whole of the community. That's cooperative economics. And other people can practice this. I played the first clip, which was a group that was based in the United Kingdom. Now, most of what I'm finding is for the UK and New Zealand and Canada and different places like that. So this is what's being done in these other countries. I don't know if they have the equivalent of Scandal or if they have the equivalent of Housewives of Atlanta or, you know, whatever shows they have and whatever they do with their pastime. I don't know if they have the BET Awards, you know, New Zealand style. But I do know that what they're talking about and what they're putting their attention and time into is these concepts here. You know, they see changes that are getting ready to take place in the world, and they're doing something about it. So we should try to do the same thing. Here's some more information. This is from Living Economies. Living Economies is le.org.nz for New Zealand. Le for Living Economies. org.nz says, we need to talk about money. The cash we're working for is working 24/7 against us. Living Economies offers four square alternatives to loans and chronic debt. Now, if you think that loans are an issue, or if you think that chronic debt is an issue, this is the part of the broadcast that's for you. So pay attention very closely. The first alternative that they're talking about is savings pools. Wish the interest on your debt could just dissolve. Savings pools give a bank loan a bath. What is a savings pool? It talks about this. It says, why waste thousands of dollars on loan interest payments? If you buy a home, you have a home to show for what you paid the vendor, but what can you show for the sometimes more than twice as much as you pay the bank? Paying double or triple an asset's purchase price is plainly a waste of money. Buy your home or fund your business with free money. It's an interesting concept. How does that work? It says forget about loans. Pool your group's funds to create a common reservoir. Take turns to make major purchases. Your interest-free contribution earns you interest-free funding. Think about that. Now, here's an example of that in real life, in real motion. There's an empowerment movement going on, economic empowerment movement going on. This is not a new concept. It's not an exclusive thing. I mean, it's taking place in loads of cities around America, in different parts of the world. In fact, I first heard about it from many of the people who were from the West Indies. In Jamaica and in Trinidad, they call it a susu or a partner. It has very many different titles, many different names. But basically, it's a group of individuals. It's a society of men or groups of men who advocate one common cause. It's just a small group of people. And their common cause is making sure there's a pool of resources that they all share in that moves around to each individual so that every individual has an opportunity to take all of that pooled money and purchase, invest, save, pay off, whatever it is that they want to pay off. They're continually funding it. They're, every week, every pay period, whatever it is, they're all continually taking whatever the agreed upon amount is, and they're putting it into this pool. And then the pool goes to one of the individuals in the group. So if it takes a $5,000 down payment to get your to purchase a house, you may not have $5,000 of your own volition tomorrow, but a small group of people or a large enough group of people pooling resources and all committing to making sure that every week they put together a $5,000 $5,000 savings nest egg that will be given to one individual in that group means that there's going to come a day when today you don't have $5,000 and tomorrow you do, because a group of people are committed to making sure that weekly or biweekly, whatever it is, $5,000 is there for somebody to use. That's a savings pool. Again, not a new concept. Not a new concept. Didn't necessarily start in England or in New Zealand. I don't know where it started. They know about this in Africa as well. But the fact that other people are focused on this idea and it's commonplace there means that we should look at people who are succeeding, understand why it is they don't fail and why they don't make excuses for failure, and we should imitate the good and productive things that they're doing. So this is a good idea for us to emulate. Savings pools. Here's another one. Local money is another square alternative to loans and chronic debt. So as we can kiss money goodbye for friendlier tender, or keep kissing it goodbye for nothing. Because one way or another, you're going to spend the money that you make. It's going to go out some way. What you might want to do is try circulating some of those dollars in your own community. This says cash flow problem. Cash is the problem. Money is a serious liability for traders. The last thing a customer wants to part with. Competitive business substitute. In this instance, they call it DIY, I'm assuming. That means do it yourself. Do it yourself cash to move product fast. Competitive communities form DIY cash networks to boost turnover, cut debt, and keep profit local. If it stands for do it yourself, it would make sense because, as the Honorable Elijah Muhammad says, do for self what the black man must do for self. We must do for self or suffer the consequences. So doing it yourself makes doggone good sense. If we form our own agreement and our own community amongst ourselves and then make sure that anything that needs to be done gets done by us. Now, here's an example of that. The Amish people. How many of y'all ever heard of a barn raising? A barn raising. We know that when it's time to build a house, you got to get the construction company to come in and you got to get developers and surveyors and this and that and the other. The Amish community have cut all of that out. The Mennonites and whatnot, they don't do that. You know, you got a young boy or a man or whatever the case may be that's moving out on his own. He's about to get married, about to start a home and a family of his own. He don't have to leave the community and, you know, go get a job and hopefully he can make it. You know, everybody's living in a little apartment until he can do better. No, the whole community, all of the men in the community, survey the land, look where would be a good spot for his home. They all get together and build a barn, and they raise and build a barn. They do it themselves. So at the end of that time, well, you know, I don't know how long it takes to raise a barn, to build a barn, but they pitch in, help, do the work, and when they're done with the work, this young man and his family now have a new home because the community took it upon themselves to build this home. That way there was no need for cash. There was no need for a down payment. You didn't have to worry about paying a developer and whether the contractors were going to be unscrupulous and run away with your money. You for self. We must depend on ourselves. Otherwise, we'll always be at the mercy of others. Here's another one. Alternative to loans and chronic debt. Food pools. We can get a lot more mileage out of our meals. That's what it says. And this is all from the Living Economies website, le.org.nz, New Zealand-based group that is putting these alternatives into practice. Food pools. Says companion planting is not just about plants. Returning to our own backyards to embrace the once declining skill of food growing we're rediscovering neighborliness as well. Growers' markets are social centers. Knowing those who produce what we're eating makes for cooperative relationships. Local food is an increasingly valuable resource. Fresh food is highly nutritious. Long-distance food leaves us dangerously dependent on fickle supply lines, exposed to high risk and cost. A viable food economy is created when farmers and backyard growers work together. Now, I want to take a stop here because I want to point something out. With all that's being done in this country, in America, and the way the food industry is really being taken over by companies that are hell-bent on flooding the market, controlling the market, and flooding it with genetically modified food, it's definitely imperative that we do what's necessary so we can begin to produce our own food. Bringing clean and healthy food to our family's dinner table, if it's not priority job one, I guarantee you that some degree of harmful substance is going to come into every single thing that you ingest. And as an example, I'm holding in my hand an eight-ounce bottle of water. Now, it's a popular brand. I'm not going to say what brand it is. They got a elk or deer or something. Looks like it's standing in a park somewhere. And their water is known for being natural spring water. However, on this particular little bottle, they got a little cartoon figure. And I tell my son when we're in the stores, anything that's got little cartoon characters on it is trying to trick you into eating it. It's probably something that you wouldn't normally eat and shouldn't eat, but to get you to eat it, they draw little pictures and put little cartoon figures on it and try to tempt you to say, ooh, I want this one. This particular bottle of water has a little cartoon boy who's holding a bottle of the same water with the deer on it, standing in a park. He's holding the water, and he's surrounded by a purple sign that says spring water with fluoride added. Kid safety cap. Now, from what I understand, fluoride is something that you should not ingest. It's actually poisonous to ingest fluoride, too much fluoride. That's why the little toothpaste tube that you use says only use a pea-sized amount and be sure not to swallow. You're not supposed to ingest fluoride. But tap water is fluoridated, and now apparently they're selling bottles of spring water that are fluoridated. But the only reason I have this bottle of spring water is because you can almost not even tell that it's been fluoridated. If I had my thumb in the wrong place, which I did when I picked up the bottle, I wouldn't even see that this water has fluoride added to it. And I would have let my son drink this water, which is not good, especially if every day I give him a little 8-ounce bottle of water. Not good. But we got to think about that. And as it says in this description of food pooling, we have to be aware that where we go, the supermarkets, the places we trust to provide food for us and our families are just merchants. They've been called merchants of death because they're just selling us whatever it is that we can fit into our mouths. Doesn't matter if it's pink slime, doesn't matter if it's some crazy, you know, wannabe chickens or whatever the case may be. If they can package it and make it look like something that's edible, we'll buy it, we'll eat it, and they get the profit. It says there's nothing to beat dining out of our own backyards. A food revolution is building momentum fast. Food localization initiatives around the country include community gardens, rooftop gardens, open orchards, food pools, farmers markets, urban foraging, and neighborhood fruit collection. Start a food pool in your neighborhood. Food pool. Start start thinking about how you can grow your own stuff. Grow some tomatoes out on your balcony. Start an herb garden in your window. Yeah, I'm sure you're going to need more than herbs to eat, but, you know, start something. Grow some spinach, grow some leafy greens, grow some lettuces, something that you can grow yourself, that you know is not genetically modified, tampered with, and messed with. No grafted food, no grafted fruits, no grafted vegetables. Let's see. And the last of these alternatives, as we've already spoken about, we kind of began with this, is time banks. Building healthy communities 1 hour at a time. Build healthy communities 1 hour at a time. We all have things we are very good at, and we all need others' expertise at times. Why not trade an hour of what you do well for an hour of skilled help? In a time bank, everyone's time is equal, no matter what type of work is done. Credits earned when you give your time can buy someone else's service. Time bank communities throughout New Zealand, or whatever country you're in when you establish yours, enjoy more hours of sunshine as anonymous strangers are transformed into friendly neighbors. Join a local time bank today or start one in your community. I happen to be in Columbia, Maryland, where there is a time banking community, and I haven't participated in it yet, but I'm looking forward to it. I'm part of several communities, and I see it work in several different places. So it's something that once you understand the concept, it makes perfectly good sense. I tried to give an example earlier about needing a babysitter. We all know how expensive child care can be. But imagine if you had a babysitter who said, no problem, you know, I'll watch your children for 4 hours. And, you know, next week when I need to run and pick my mom up from the airport and bring her back and take her around the city, you know, just be there for us. Help me get to the airport. Help me get her back. Take us around when we need to. 4 hours for 4 hours. That's what friends are for, right? Those are the alternatives to loans and to chronic debt. And if, as I said before, if those things are plaguing you, if you realize that they are a detriment to our society and they're a detriment to your pocket, then you should definitely consider some of those items. Again, we're talking about alternatives, alternative monetary systems and alternative currency exchanges. We looked at the time banks. We looked at the different cities where we've seen people are actually doing this and putting this into practice. Here's another one in Brooklyn. You know Brooklyn, they go hard, right? Brooklyn Greenbacks, this is what they call them. Their currency is called Brooklyn Greenbacks, approximately $10,000 worth of Brooklyn greenbacks have been issued. One greenback is issued to $12, which is considered a living hourly wage in New York City. And they have currency is broken down into 1/8, 1/4, 1/2, or 1 whole greenback. It's about 200 members, and they have about 4 storefront businesses that participate in this particular program. All they're doing is agreeing to exchange money, to exchange time for money. And once they do that, any goods, any services that they need, they can be provided by the members of that group. They know that they're covered on. This is what it takes for a community to sustain itself and break our addiction and our dependence on U.S. monetary notes, U.S. reserve notes. If we know that the value is slipping in those things, U.S. reserve notes, then we need to find a better way to get what we need. Because to save those is saving a depreciating asset. It's going to not be less. It's going to lose value. 5-10 years from now, that $10 savings, that 401k, that whatever it is you're holding on to, you're going to have a depreciating asset, devalued asset. So if you already know that's a bad investment, let's get with the program, start looking in a different direction. This is the No Romance Without Finance show. We're getting ready to go into our last half an hour and I haven't taken a break yet. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to go ahead and give us a little bit of a break. And when we come back, we're going to hear a brief word from our sponsor. And then we're going to go ahead and wrap it up. My computer looks like it's not trying to cooperate with me. So if it doesn't want to cooperate, that'll mean I'll have to deprive myself of a break, which is certainly not what I want to do. Because I like being fair. So since it doesn't seem like it wants to cooperate, we can just keep on rolling. That might be what we have to do. Hold up. I think we might be in business. All right, here we go. Radio. This is the No Romance Without Finance show. I'm your host, Vernon Muhammad, and I want to thank you for joining me for this conversation here. We are getting some good information on alternatives to money and how to create an alternative economy and currency exchange of our own. I wanted to share with you a word from one of our sponsors. Our main sponsor for this show is Freedom Paper Company. For those of you who don't know, from our own community, a group of brothers and sisters have gotten together and formed a company that is manufacturing and distributing our own brand of bathroom tissue, paper towels, facial tissue, trash bags, and a host of other cleaning janitorial supplies and things of that nature. These are things that we all use and we all will continue to purchase. So purchase them from companies and from an entity that will invest in your community. Freedom Paper Company has a community incentive program, and they also have an educational incentive program that benefits schools and causes that are relevant to your community. So support a business that supports you. Go to freedompapercompany.com, make a purchase, order a case. Do a charitable act. Buy some bathroom tissue for your church, your mosque. If you know about the auditing department, you know they need bathroom, they need facial tissue because people are going to cry and blow their nose. Buy a case and donate it to the auditing department. Buy a case for your family. You know the allergy season is coming up and you're going to need to blow your nose with something. Buy Freedom Facial Tissue. It's ultra soft. All that good stuff. Go ahead and make that purchase. Show your support. Buy black. All right, we're in our last half an hour, and I see that my good sister has joined me, Sister Gidget. It's so nice of you to swing on through. Welcome to the No Romance Without Finance show. How are you feeling this evening?
I am well, sir. I'm sorry it took me a little minute. I had to take my phone off of mute. I am well, Brother Vernon, and how are you today?
I'm doing well. We got another... good one going on here. I'm tackling a subject that we touched on once before, alternatives to the monetary system. We're trying to break our addiction, trying to get us to live with what we don't absolutely need. And it turns out that one of the things we don't absolutely need, hold on to your wig, Sister Gidget, you don't actually need money.
Well, I'm glad I don't have a wig, and and yes, sir, I have been listening, and I thanks to you, Brother Vernon, I've been aware of that for a very long time. I just think that we have so conformed to this Western society that we have, you know, long been separated from our culture when we actually cultivated the earth, when we actually traded our skills as well as our goods with others to just have what we need. And I think a lot of that comes from us having the desire to live outside of our means. But this economic situation is quickly bringing to reality that we're going to have to go back to our traditional ways of survival, and that's with trading goods and services and time.
You know, this is causing people to sober up real quick. And people are realizing that they are getting laid off, downsized, or whatever the case may be, and they find themselves unable to maintain their living place. They can't pay the rent. I know people who have moved out of apartments or wherever they were living and thought they were going to move into someplace else, but they got stuck between a rock and a hard place, so they are actually living in hotels. This is happening in Atlanta. This is happening in D.C. It's happening in New York, and it's a very, very tough place to be in. When you realize how much you need to pay to live in a hotel for a month, it's oppressive. It really is oppressive, and this is more proof and verification that we need to have community around us, because if one of us falls, if one of us, you know, gets put out, you know, whatever the case may be, who are you going to turn to? Where are you going to go? How are you going to keep yourself out of the element? If you don't have enough for a hotel for this week, where are you going to stay? Something to think about.
Well, yeah, and I think the basis for all of that is unity. You know, we have so separated ourselves socially as well. And so we've become a selfish people where we desire our own space. But there may come a time when it has to be a multiple family situation that will have to suffice, you know, until things get better, or it might just become a normal way of life. In the villages of my grandfather, the families still live together, and that is a traditional culture in Kenya. So everything old is new again, Brother Vernon.
I'm glad we had this part of the circle when it's coming back around, because this means we're going to get back to the stuff that actually works and stuff that's actually good for us. So I hope that, you know, in my lifetime, and while I'm still young and virile enough to enjoy it, I hope it comes around and we do get the benefits and enjoy it.
Yes, sir.
Now check this out.
Inshallah.
This is a this is an excerpt. I've been reading excerpts from Message to the Black Man tonight, in addition to all the other stuff I've been reading and sharing. On page 198 of Message to the Black Man, under the chapter entitled The Economic Program, Part 2, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad states, as I previously wrote, it is difficult to plan an economic system for a people who are subjected to the whim of another people. You are limited in your jobs, salaries, and income by the white man. But you can still learn not to be reckless and wasteful spenders and happy-go-lucky people with nothing of your own. Every sport the white man with bulging banks of money enjoys, you try to imitate him. Take what he gives you and learn to save some of it. The hardest times are before those of you who will not accept this program and follow the way of Allah and Islam. Guide you and set you in heaven at once with money, good homes, and friendship in all walks of life. So basically, he's saying, take what's good for you. I got the solution. Allah, Islam, and what I'm offering you will bring you to money, good homes, and friendship in all walks of life. We gotta change our attitude and change the things that we're used to. Sister Gidget, I've heard you talk about several times before, making a change and sacrificing whether or not you get your hair done or whether or not you get your nails done and all the little things that we spend money on so freely on a sometimes a daily basis. You know, there's some people go to Starbucks every day, drop a $5 bill or $6 bill for a cup, $6 for a cup of coffee. Every day. Sometimes they get some in the morning and in the evening time. That's about $10, $12 every day for coffee. I bought myself a thermos, one of them thermoses that campers use, like Fred Flintstone used to carry. I make myself an egg coffee, boy. I hook myself. I got my little $1.35 Irish cream. I think it's like 16 ounces, so, you know, put a little shot in there. That'll be good for about 3 weeks. And I'm good to go.
Well, I tell you, Brother Brennan, I calculated it, and I saved, you know, sometimes vanity costs. So, and when I go to the beauty shop, it costs me a lot of money because I got a lot of hair. And so instead of making that trip, you know, every 2 weeks, I've cut that down to a month. And instead of going to, you know, the nail shop, I can, you know, do a manicure and a pedicure at home. And I have actually been able to save around $230 a month.
Mm. That's
just by cutting the business in half. So if I eliminated it all together, I would save about $500 a month almost.
Wow. But, you know, you're right. You got to start somewhere. And that was a bold step just to be able to say, hey, I cut it in half. That's great. There may be some people out there that are spending more than that. There may be some people that are spending less than that. But see where you can cut. See where you can minimize or where you can eliminate something that you can start to redirect your dollars, redirect that energy that should be being used to strengthen your family's economy and then being used again to strengthen your community's economy. We got to take a step. We got to begin somewhere.
And unnecessary things is what I learned. You know, I haven't calculated it yet, but unnecessary things. You know, and I'm just gonna give you some example. Like some women, in particularly, if they wear makeup, you know, like I do, I wear like eyeliner, lipstick, and lip gloss. Well, some of us have like 20 tubes of lipstick, and when you look at lipstick costing $7 to $8 a tube, eyeliner is about $2 a tube, and we got like 15 eyeliner pencils, and you know, we don't just go and buy 99 cents pencil sharpener, we just go get a new pencil. You know, but, I mean, when we add that up, when we go and get unnecessary foods even, like chips and dip and what you call a snack. Well, what I learned is that if you comply with how to eat to live, then you don't really have a need for a snack, you know. Now, I know that's a real hard thing to deal with, but I've learned, you know, economically, you can save a lot of money. And then another thing I did for my grandson, which I've been doing this for a long time, I saved my change. Like, I never spend change. Mm-hmm. If I go to the store and something costs $1.03, that 97 cents, I put it away like I never had it. And so that started the trust fund for my grandson's education. And so I remember last year, it was like $4,300 that we were able to put away for his, you know, for his trust fund education. So, you know, and not just me. That wasn't $4,300 for me, but my children have done the same thing. And since he's the only grandson right now, all of our change together with his father, his mother, my other two children, ended up being about $4,300. And that was just from not spending change. So there are a lot of little subtle things that we can do. And you'll be surprised in pooling the resources together, even in your family, even with your adult children, even with your adult sisters and brothers or whatever, come together, build a family fund for a particular purpose. You'll be amazed at how at the end of a quarter, at the end of 6 months or a year, how much you can accumulate just by doing that.
That is so right. You know, I'm thinking as you were saying that, I was thinking about, you know, my last family reunion that I went to. I think there were about 150 people there. Of course, there were quite a few children and you know, middle school or high school age children. So when you think about who's going to college first and who's going to be the first person to get anything, things like that would come into play. But I can see how, if you have 100 or so people doing that, everybody just round up whatever your purchase is to the next or to the nearest dollar and put that change into a fund so that when this one goes to college, if it takes us 6 months to get their tuition, bam, you know, cool, we do that 6 months. Next one, you know, join in line. We all do that again, and now it's your turn. We'll pay your tuition for a semester. You know, it can be done. If everybody does a little bit, we can accomplish a lot.
Yes,
so that is something that I'm hoping, really, really hoping, to begin to see more of, because it makes no sense that, you know, even in our own community, we can look and see that there are people in need, and we, you know, everything comes down to the dollar. It bothers me to know that a brother would refuse to give someone a ride home just because he doesn't have gas money to pay for it. You know, everybody at the end, when there's, you know, time for people to have dinner or get a bean pie at least or something, you know, somebody has to walk away empty-handed because nobody had money or they didn't have money to buy a meal. You know, it shouldn't be that way. We should always be able to at least offer somebody a means by which they can get what it is they need. And if they don't have money, or money is not going to be the medium of exchange, then it should be an easy thing to do, to say, well, okay, you know, at the end of the meeting, you know, the church needs to be cleaned up, and if you do that, then you may not want people just, you know, spending the night and sleeping in the church because they cleaned up. But you want to be able to offer them something. If you do that, then, hey, all of the brothers will get together and get you a new pair of shoes if that's what you need, or we'll get you some socks and clean underwear or whatever it is, you know. But it's just life. The only way to get something out of life is to pay the cost. You got to do something so that you can earn what it is you need. But we who are in position and have things to offer, we got to make it possible for people to be able to earn from us. That means let people do some work for you. Let people help you out with the things that you need. And when they help you out, then in turn or in kind, offer them something, maybe an alternative to money. Maybe somebody will work for food. Maybe somebody will help you clean your basement if you help them clean their basement. That's the best kind of tit for tat I know of. But we are coming to the end of this conversation. I don't think it was a slow conversation. I had a whole lot of information to share, and there's so much more on this topic. I just shared, you know, two particular countries and several programs, what they're doing in this area, in this vein. This is being done all over the world. There are vast movements that know and understand that we can't remain dependent on what the economy and what the currency of the day is, because currencies come and go. And just like you see, you may not hear it on the news on the regular, but what's going on in, I think it was Scandinavia, what's going on in Cyprus, what's going on in Greece, all these different countries is based on the people's realizing that the dollar, whatever, you know, form of dollar bill that they use in their country is not sufficient. And at a certain point in time, it becomes worthless. So before we get to that day, let's learn what we need to do so that we're not caught out there. We're not stuck and short without because we didn't do what's necessary. Let's find alternatives to the monetary system and to the medium of exchange that we're using so we can make sure everybody has what they need. So, Sister Gidget, we're in the last 6 or 7 minutes, I think. We got a few more to go. What's the lineup for this week? Or do you know? I think on Tuesday, I know that we have the Out on the Front Lines with the Fruit of Islam by Jihad Muhammad. He has his show. He does every Tuesday.
Yeah, but you know, we also have a new show.
That's right, on Monday, right?
Yes, we have a new show called Conscious Black Nation. Conscious Black Nation.
Oh, Conscious Black Nation. I thought you said something about country music.
No, it's Conscious Black Nation, and we're going to be talking about things that are directly affecting our community, things that we need to be aware of, and, you know, getting, you know, unifying our churches, our mosques, and our temples, wherever we may be, because no matter what, we are divided by faith, but we are bound by circumstances. So we're going to be having conversations about things that are occurring in the news and, you know, political, spiritual, mental, physical, whatever it is, you know, we need to come together as a people regardless of what faith base that we may have. And then on this Tuesday, it will be a rebroadcast because, of course, it is the National Believers Meeting for the Nation of Islam. So Brother Jihad will do a re-air on Wednesday, DJ Black Caesar and friends will be back with hip hop and comedy. And on Thursday, oh my God, Brother Vernon, the interview of a lifetime with actor Tony King, formerly known as Tony King, that is now known as Brother Malik Farrakhan. And oh, I've had several conversations with him this week, and he is such an amazing person. He is a living legend. There's so much to this man you would not believe. And I don't know if we're going to be able to get it all in one interview, but he said if not, he would be so willing to come back. He is now the head of security for Public Enemy. And it has just been an overwhelming joy and a dream come true because this was my first crush.
Really?
Even though I was 12 years old, but it's a dream come true to interview him. And then on Friday, we have another Tony. We have student minister Tony Muhammad from the Western region of the Nation of Islam will head up our study group on Friday night at 8 p.m. And then next Saturday, we'll be back with Young Gifted and back with our Nation of Islam hip-hop artists. And then on Sunday, we'll be back with you, Brother Vernon,
indeed.
Getting some more information about what is it? Oh, he's going to kill me. Steve Fox is going to join us and give us some information about what he calls the best business in the world, and it's trades and commodities. So,
right.
Looking forward to that.
We're excited about that. Well, that is the end of our broadcast today. Thank you for joining me on the No Romance Without Finance show. I appreciate you. And once again, take this stuff and go use it. Look these items up, look these issues up, and see how you can apply them and get busy with them in your own life. Take care, everyone. Peace and blessings. Assalamu alaikum.
Well, they come strong.